Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and we're going to evolve today in this show. It's a wonderful opportunity for all of us. Just think of that. We're all looking for stronger evolution, aren't we? And to help us do that, we have a wonderful guest who's written an amazing book that I've totally devoured and digested and loved every inch of it. It's called Evolution's Purpose, and it really helps us understand life, understand who we are, why we're here, what we're doing, why is there so much trouble. It's so great to know all these things. We have it all figured out. Now we just have to move forward. That's the trick. So, to help us do that, we're going to be talking with the author of Evolution's Purpose, Steve McIntosh. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning.
Yeah, I'm so glad you could join us because we need to evolve. And
yeah, indeed. I think it's our first duty. You know, we live in a world of trouble and suffering, and the evolution of our culture and our consciousness, you know, the psychosocial evolution of human history is really, you know, in need of some further development and understanding of the larger picture of evolution, understanding how human history fits into that, as I argue in the book, it can lead directly to a more evolved world.
And yet the term evolution has been hard to come by in this world, and it started to become more important with Darwin.
Sure. I think, you know, evolution is probably the greatest scientific discovery of all time. But in the book, I'm careful to define evolution as certainly including Darwin's discovery of the descent with modification of species in the biological realm. I define evolution more broadly as the universe's ceaseless process of becoming, which has been going on for 13.7 billion years since the first emergence of the Big Bang. So just to quickly define evolution, right, that includes the evolution of matter and like a periodic table of elements that we see in our physics and chemistry class. That's sort of a fossil record of the evolution of matter as it emerged from the debris of the Big Bang, which is basically hydrogen and a little bit of helium, and complexified to the point where we had a planet, you know, the blue jewel of planet Earth that was capable of sustaining life. And so really, you know, after the first Big Bang, after the development of the cosmos, you get a kind of a second Big Bang with the emergence of life. You know, the emergence of life is still unexplained by science. It's still a momentous mystery. And it gives birth to an entirely new domain of evolution where new types of development occur. The main difference between the evolution of matter and the evolution of life is that life has purpose. Life has agency. You know, life forms strive to survive and reproduce. And this underlying intentionality is a prerequisite for the Darwinian form of natural selection through which biology develops.
And yet in your book you talk about that there always has been a purpose. It just hasn't been understood because the purpose, the instrumental purpose of the universe before there was life in the universe, was leading us to life in the universe.
Yeah, to understand how we can conceive of evolution having a purpose is we begin to see that the purpose emerges within evolution. Purpose first emerges with life. And then you have what we might term as a third Big Bang with the emergence of a third domain of development, a third kind of evolution, which transcends biology. Just as biology transcends the evolution of matter and evolves in a new way, the emergence of human consciousness and culture inaugurates a new kind of evolution, which has led to our global civilization. It's not just a kind of biological evolution involving, you know, more developed tools. It's a unique kind of evolution because it relies on the freedom of purpose that humans have, right? Animals may have purposes, but humans can have purposes for our purposes, right? We can have life-changing purposes and purposes that take more than one life to complete, you know, purposes that make things better for everyone. And it's by trying to improve our conditions over the last, you know, at least 40,000 years that humanity has developed and evolved. But when we look at the structure of human evolution, we can see that humans have improved their conditions most dramatically when they've improved their definition of improvement itself, when they've conceived of a new set of values and a new realm of ideals. These are the things which allow for new developments of culture, which we can see in the great emergences of history, whether it's, you know, the emergence, whereby something more keeps coming from something less. And that pattern, that structure of emergence, goes all the way back to the Big Bang. I mean, just as we include hydrogen atoms in our bodies, and we include the achievements, the cultural achievements of our ancestors, you know, within our minds, within our culture, we can see how we're using all of the emergences of evolution here, you know, in the moment, as we have this conversation.
We're the product of the past.
Well, the origin is ever present. Is you know, we carry, you know, our creation story with us, right? We can't help but use a creation story. We just like we're using the foundations of the buildings that we're sitting in. The creation story of our age is evolution, and the science of evolution has a philosophy attached to it. No matter what you do, there's no way to have a frame or thinking about evolution without some kind of philosophy. And the philosophy of scientific materialism, which evolution has really been associated with for the last 150 years, the facts of evolution themselves are breaking out of that mold. You know, the idea that evolution is just a kind of a random accident with no meaning or no larger purpose, that's as much of a myth as the idea that the world was created in 6 days. And so it's the science itself that's helping us recognize we need a more inclusive philosophy that can recognize the value that evolution has created. You know, evolution's a prolific generator of value. And when we can begin to come to grips with that value and understand it and have a moral way of appreciating it that's not linear, that's not ethnocentric, that's not anthropocentric, we can begin to reclaim progress in evolution. And when we understand how evolution progresses, this really demonstrates evolution's purpose.
Right, and knowing that purpose puts us on the threshold of so many new truths that we haven't been able to hold before. And for instance, why haven't people had this discussion over the last 1,500 years? And that's because they weren't prepared for it. Science was too limited and wasn't able to be conscious enough.
Sure. And even the idea that evolution progresses, there has been a time, and it's still many within the academic community, deny that evolution is progressive. They think that that's a kind of an overlay or a biased interpretation that favors us. And people of good sense and good faith have rejected progress for good reasons, particularly because in the past it was subject to abuse, right? The idea that some humans were more evolved than others led to racism, and it was justified colonialism. The idea that some cultures were more evolved than others was used for all kinds of imperialism and ethnocentric notions of cultural superiority. And so in order to reclaim progress and see how evolution does create value, but not in a linear way, not in a simplistic way, not like just geological strata stacked on top of each other, but that evolution is kind of this concept of an ecosystem, which we see in biology, we can see that same kind of structure within human consciousness and culture. And this is one of the ways we can reclaim the power of understanding progress. I mean, if we want to make the world a better place, and we realize that the most dramatic ways that the world has been made better is through cultural evolution, if we want cultural evolution to progress further, if we're ambivalent about the idea of progress to begin with, clearly that's going to be a limitation or a constraint on our ability to make things better.
Well, culture is very important. You talk about culture a lot in the book, how consciousness is bound to culture. It's very important for us to understand that, and we'll talk more about what I love in this new term that it's not so new, but it's becoming more part of my vernacular, is dialectic. And so it's where we get stuck. And right now, the consciousness of our culture is very different all around the world. And for many of us, we don't realize how many different cultures are moving forward at the same time, some a lot slower than others. And what is it that's making them so much slower? And there was some research done about that, and it showed that empathy was also bound to culture, and that so many people did not have the same ethical sense, empathetic sense, that some of us others might have due to the imposition of their cultures.
Sure. Like I said before, one of the most dramatic ways that humans can evolve their situation and make their world better is by improving their definition of improvement. And so by improvement, I'm talking about that which is beautiful, true, and good. I mean, that's essentially what people are trying to do when they're trying to make their conditions better. They're trying to, as culture evolves, we move from trying to avoid pain and fear, and we're increasingly drawn to ways to make our situation better in positive terms. And we can see this, for example, in the evolution of morality. In earlier stages of human development, those who were worthy
right? There's an evolution of the awareness of suffering.
Right, and it's also an awareness of sameness, right? In other words, recognizing that humans don't even have to be of the same religion or the same nationality to deserve our moral consideration. And in progressive elements of culture, we now see the emergence of a kind of a world-centric morality where really all sentient beings are deserving of moral consideration. And I think you have to be a pretty extreme value relativist to say that there hasn't been progress from, you know, kind of a tribal-centric morality to a world-centric morality. We can see the same kind of evolution in truth, right? We go from a magical worldview where sort of an animistic perception of what's true is the description of reality. We move from that to a mythical description where, you know, scripture defines what's real, then a scientific rational, and now to increasingly holistic understandings of what's true. These are definitely developments within evolution that show that it's moving in a direction of inclusiveness and a direction of greater truth and beauty and goodness, despite setbacks, despite the pathologies, despite the problems that come with every step forward. When we get in touch with the fact that evolution is working within us, we can feel an evolutionary impulse to live up to our potential, to, you know, to do our duty, do the right thing in the world, to give our gift. We can begin to understand that that's evolution working through us, right? That to be human is to know what it feels like to be evolution happening. And when we get in touch with this evolutionary impulse and work with it as a practice, it improves our ability to, you know, make our lives better, to raise our own consciousness, and it makes us more effective at helping others.
It's amazing how powerful the internet is for this. And I'm thinking in terms of that teenage girl who was shot in Pakistan. And years ago, that might not have been as important to people because it wasn't as obvious as it is now because the internet brings it into focus.
Yeah, I mean, the problems of the few are now becoming the problems of the many, which is a very positive development. I mean, just connecting our globe through culture, having a globalized media, that's a powerful force for evolution, even as it disrupts cultures and causes problems and brings less developed peoples in contact with more developed peoples and results in things like terrorism. It also results in really positive examples of progress, like you mentioned, intolerance of abuse and oppression that we can see overseas. Now that that's becoming more visible, we're able to work with that and try to help to eliminate that more effectively than ever before.
Right. I want to come back to these triad of values that you speak about through the book, and it's very important, I think, for us to use that as a bottom line in life, that beauty, truth, and goodness are the main values that we strive for. And you also have a discussion on why goodness is used instead of love.
Yes. Now the triad of terms or concepts, the beautiful, the true, and the good, is traditionally traced back to Plato, who wrote in the 4th century B.C., the Greek philosopher. But this triad has been championed and recognized by thinkers east and west, and in ancient and modern times, even though there's been lots of philosophical and intellectual discourse within the West that challenges the reality of values, that argues that values are simply, you know, projections or merely subjective. Reclaiming value realism and showing how these concepts are not simply given in a Platonic sense, but they're not merely subjective either, and that when we think about values, rather than thinking about them in a linear way, like just like an upward escalator to the good, we can think about them in a more nuanced way by recognizing that values have a systemic property, that they, you mentioned earlier, this dialectical property. You know, all values in a sense can be related to love, can be reduced to love in certain ways, but I argue that goodness is really the best concept for naming what we might understand as a sort of a plumb line to perfection. You know, making things better is not simply a matter of making them more good, because sometimes the good is only seen by the pathology that we're seeking to avoid, right? Goodness itself sort of tacks back and forth away from what's wrong. As we try to make things better, sometimes we make things worse. But understanding the values of the beautiful, the true, and the good, and how they work together as a system, and how they have a reality that's both objective and subjective, how they work together, like electricity. You know, in order to exist, it has to have a negative pole and a positive pole, and it's like a circuit that goes in between. And we can begin to understand values in this way, too. They're like approaches to perfection. You know, they're the ways we make things better. They're the directions of evolution. And it's our free will. and the more our consciousness develops, the more we grow spiritually, the more the dynamic quality of the world becomes visible to us. You know, so these values are there all along, but we have to grow in order to be able to recognize them with increasing clarity.
But more and more I see people using love as the bottom line in life, and I appreciate that. It's just that I like goodness as an easier determinant of what love means.
Yeah, I think goodness provides a better philosophical handle because, you know, love can name something bad, right? I mean, I like to think of it as love is the desire to do good to others. And so we needn't be overly technical about distinguishing goodness from love. They're clearly related. You know, one points to the other. But goodness is a handle we can hold because goodness is related to so many concepts of better and beneficial and improvement. And so from a philosophical perspective, I argue that these concepts do matter, and having a philosophy that can understand value in a nuanced and sophisticated way is extremely useful in doing you know, whatever our life's work is, understanding what we're doing and how it fits in with the larger purposes of the universe, how as agents of evolution our opportunity is to bring value into the world, and the more we do that, the more we grow spiritually. Understanding these basic connections is a really an emerging new form of philosophy that I think, again, can lead to a more evolved world.
Right, and so I really think it's important for everybody to hold these three words in their consciousness and reflect on them a lot about whether things are bringing us to truth, goodness, and beauty in better ways.
Yeah, the beautiful, the true, and the good is really the cornerstone of my philosophy, and in the book I argue that that's what evolution is that evolution is properly conceived, philosophically understood, is a movement toward increasing realizations of the beautiful, the true, and the good, despite the setbacks and the regressions and the pathologies that we see in this world of trouble and suffering. We have been trying to make things better, and we're agents of evolution, and so we know that evolution is purposeful because we can feel it within ourselves. Alfred North Whitehead, who's a big inspiration to me and to integral philosophy in general, actually defined evolution as an increase in the ability to experience what is intrinsically valuable. Let me say that again. Right. It's a consciousness-centric definition of evolution, where he sort of says it's an increase in the ability to experience what is intrinsically valuable is what defines, you know, the evolution of biology and the evolution of humanity as we are drawn to this kind of transcendent idea. In other words, animal needs can be satisfied, but human needs can never be satisfied, because as soon as we achieve one, we fulfill one set of needs, we awaken to a higher set of needs. This continuous emergence of new understandings of how things can be better it points to the fact that these values we're talking about, they reach all the way down to the ground in terms of basic material values, and they also reach all the way up to a transcendent connection to spirit at the highest level, because no matter how beautiful, true, or good we make our lives, we can always sense that there's more beauty and more truth and more goodness yet to be achieved, and that gives us a clue about how these values connect to transcendent dimensions.
Right, and because of this, we're able to deal with the problems that this whole universe is always faced with, including humanity. And that's what the dialectic is about, is you can't have improvement unless you're facing a problem, some obstacle, an error in your thinking, in your culture, whatever shows up leads to problem solving, and we move forward to a greater synthesis that way.
Yeah, I like to explain it as like a sailboat tacking against the wind. You know, when humans try to improve their conditions, the opportunities for improvement are kind of defined by what's wrong. And so moving away from what's wrong is really the major opening that we have by solving the problems that exist and fulfilling the needs that we have based on the problematic conditions that we face. So this creates, in a sense, this dialectic we've been speaking about, you know, that's often simplified through the idea of thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. So if you have a condition, the thesis, and it's problematic, the antithesis of that is how you can evolve, how you can move to a higher state. But often, because you're moving away from what's wrong, this sort of creates a latent pathology in that movement itself. In other words, we see for example, progressive culture pushing off against what's wrong with the mainstream, you know, environmental degradation, nuclear proliferation, unrestrained globalization, all the problems of modernity have created an opportunity to move toward a culture that's more inclusive, that's more holistic, that's more environmentally sensitive, that's more spiritual. But because of this movement of antithesis, this creates an opportunity for still further development in a kind of another direction, like a sailboat can't sail directly into the wind. It has to advance obliquely, kind of tacking back and forth. And that's how we can see this as a dialectic of thesis, antithesis, and synthesis emerging in cultural evolution, is because opportunities for improvement are, in a sense, defined by moving away from what's wrong and then recovering what's been lost. So, for example, with progressive culture, we see the beginning of this recovery of the wisdom of the past through its adoption of tribal culture. Like, one of the cool things about progressive culture is its tribal aesthetic. If you go to Burning Man, for example, there's a whole city based on a tribal aesthetic. And so reclaiming tribal dress, tribal entheogenic practices, tribal aesthetics in general, shamanic wisdom, for example, is one of the ways that progressive culture, it transcends by including, right? It moves forward in cultural evolution by reaching back and gathering back the lost wisdom and beauty of the past.
Well, your book has so much to do about the evolution of culture that we probably should do another show on about culture, because there is so much juice in that, and I have a lot of ideas that I'd like to ask you about. But what I want to come back to is this process of thesis, antithesis, and synthesis that I think is, and from what I get out of your book, is the theme of our universe. Somehow, we can't grow without obstacles. And we always think that we should be living here in heaven on earth and everything should go along smoothly, and we keep bumping into trouble. Yet, from what I understand of evolution now, that trouble is there for a reason, that we wouldn't grow unless we were facing it.
Yeah, conceived from the big picture, the widest view we can see to begin to understand why we live in a world of trouble and suffering, and why things are difficult, and why we still have so much evolution yet to achieve. We can sort of understand this a little more clearly if we understand the purpose of the finite universe to begin with. In other words, if we can conceive of an infinite universe, a kind of an eternal state, a non-dual existential reality that exists before the Big Bang, before the distinct and dramatic beginning of the finite universe, then we can see that in some ways the finite universe could well be fulfilling the purposes of this larger, encompassing, infinite universe by adding to a kind of existential perfection the experience of becoming perfect in time. You know, that is, if the evolutionary creatures, the agents of evolution that have emerged within this process of evolution, if they're recruited to the task of defining and deciding what is relatively more perfect and of perfecting the universe gradually through acting as agents of evolution to improve things here on Earth, and perhaps in an afterlife to continue in our evolution of consciousness and the perfection of our spiritual understanding, we can begin to understand that the finite universe is something to be overcome. It's an antithesis, right? If the infinite universe, the spiritual universe, is the thesis, and the finite universe is the antithesis, then evolution can be conceived as a synthesis, sort of the gradual growing back toward a perfect state, toward an infinite state, but adding to that the experience of becoming perfect in time.
So it's like a game.
I argue in the book, carefully, I sort of make the case in a logical sequence of tenets to describe that and for us to understand what the purpose of evolution is, conceived from a sort of a spiritual or theological perspective.
Right. And so if we take oneness and then create this, not lightly, create a game, a heavy game, called duality, then we use duality to create synthesis.
It gives us an opportunity to participate in perfection,
right,
and to choose it and make it our own,
right,
and not just have it handed to us.
Right. So instead of sitting around bored all day long with oneness, we set up a game to play called duality that we now have to bring back to oneness.
Yeah, and I think that that the problems of the world, the opportunities that we have to make things better, that by itself is a tremendous gift, a tremendous opportunity. And so recognizing problems, recognizing the suffering in the world as an opportunity for us to be in partnership, right, with the creative force of the universe, to be creators ourselves and to work to make the world waking up to the fact that we are indeed agents of evolution.
Right. So we, instead of bemoaning trouble, let's be very grateful for the opportunity to overcome it.
Yeah, I think that's an important way of framing it and understanding it.
So we only have a couple of minutes left for this show, and we're talking about your book, Evolution's Purpose. When the publishing date on it is recent?
October 1st.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's only about 3 weeks old, and it's available, of course, on Amazon and in bookstores and at my website, stevemcintosh.com, where I've also got excerpts and videos and audio interviews and lots of free information on my work.
Okay, Steve McIntosh. It's McIntosh, stevemcintosh.com. This is such a pleasure to talk with you about your book and evolution. I'm so grateful that you wrote it because I have now such a stronger sense of our purpose in life and how to hold it in this sense of opportunity even more so than ever before.
Well, thank you, Peter. It really means a lot to me to hear you say that. It makes all the hard work worthwhile. And hey, we're in this together.
Yeah, we all are. And we're going to create a better culture. And hopefully I can get you back on the show again soon to talk about the evolution of culture and really what we can strive for, what we're looking at, and how the antithesis of our cultures are moving us forward.
Yeah, we can talk about the structure and function and how this deeper understanding of cultural evolution that integral philosophy is bringing really is creating opportunities to improve things in new ways and with new power.
Great. Steve, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Thanks, Peter. It was a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or PRN.FM. I can be reached at Peter at Heart River, H-E-A-R-T, river.org, or 212-222-7748. Lots going on at Heart River, and I have lots of classes and all kinds of opportunities to work with you. So please give a call. Thanks so much.